Daniel had been reading the book of Jeremiah. And from the prophecies of Jeremiah, he recognized that the 70 years of Babylonian captivity were about over. Daniel was taken in the first group that were taken captive, 606 BC. He was one of those young princes, sharp young guy, good looking, and was taken to be trained to be one of the counselors for Nebuchadnezzar in the affairs that dealt with the Israeli people. Daniel, because of God's anointing upon his life, the hand of God, and the gifts of God, he was promoted and became a real emissary of God's people there in the Babylonian court. Seventy years have gone by since Daniel was taken as a captive. We can only estimate that he was probably in his late teens when he was taken as a captive, which means that he's now in his late 80s. 70 years have gone by. And he has survived the transition from the Babylonian kingdom to the Medo-Persian kingdom. And in the first year of Darius, the king, he was aware of the fact that the 70 years were about over. So Daniel set himself for fasting and prayer. And I believe that what Daniel was doing was just making himself available to God. And that's something that I like to do. Make myself available to God. I do that every morning before I roll out of bed. I just sort of lie there for a moment and say, God, I'm available. Guide my day. Use me today however you wish, Lord. Take control of my life. If there's anything special you want from me today or have for me to do for you today, Lord, just bring it along. I want to be available. And Daniel, I think, was just doing that, just saying, Lord, I've been placed in a pretty prominent position. I have a lot of clout, political clout. And I know that the time has come for your people to be repatriated. And perhaps, Lord, because of the position I am in, you might want to use me somehow in the repatriating of the nation. So, as he was in prayer, fasting, making himself available to God, we read in verse 20 of chapter 9, while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, presenting my supplications before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, who I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening prayers. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. Beginning of your supplications, the commandment came forth. I've come to show you, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. There are 70 sevens that are determined upon your people, upon the holy city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in the everlasting righteousness, to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. 77s are going to bring the culmination of the whole thing. It's going to bring an end of sin, reconciliation for iniquity, the finishing of the transgressions, bringing in everlasting righteousness to complete the visions and the prophecies and to anoint the most holy. Now the 77s are divided. Know therefore and understand, from the time of the commandment to go forth and to rebuild Jerusalem unto the coming of the Messiah the Prince will be 77s and 62 sevens, and the walls will be built again in troublous times. But after the 62 sevens, the Messiah will be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof will be with a dispersion. The Hebrew word translated flood is a pouring out or a dispersion, and that is of the Jews. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. So you have 69 sevens, 483 years. From the time of the commandment to restore and rebuild Jerusalem to the coming of the Messiah, the Prince. Jesus rebuked the Pharisees because they could read the signs of the heavens. They could tell in the morning if the sky was red, it's going to be a, you know, a bad day. If it was red in the evening, going to have a good day tomorrow. But he said, you don't know the signs of the times or the, you know, the coming. Had they been reading Daniel's prophecy, they would have been alerted to the time of the coming of the Messiah. It would be 483 years after the commandment to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Now, there was a commandment given to Ezra to go back and to restore and rebuild the temple. But some years later, when those that had gone back to restore and rebuild the temple and that great group that went back with Ezra, they had become very disenchanted with the task. It was much greater than what they had ever dreamed or realized. The havoc and the destruction by the Babylonian army. What was once the great temple of Solomon was a huge pile of rubble. And that's when, you remember, the word of the Lord came to Zerubbabel through Zechariah the prophet, saying that this mountain will be moved, but not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord, shall this mountain be removed, the mountain of rubble. But some of the fellows had come back to the Persian Empire, where Nehemiah was a cupbearer to King Artaxerxes. And Nehemiah started questioning these fellows who had come back from Jerusalem. How are things going? You know, oh, it must be exciting to be in Jerusalem. Oh, no, it's such a mess. It's you know, everybody's discouraged. We're ready to quit. And of course, you had Haggai over there saying, hey guys, let's get on to it, you know. Why do you think you're having troubles? Why do you think that you're having financial problems and all? Your purses have holes. It's because you've actually built your own houses, but you've forsaken the house of God. And so you're dwelling in your sealed houses, and the house of God is still desolate. And they were trying to encourage the people, but there was great discouragement because the task was much greater than what they ever dreamed. And so, hearing this report, Nehemiah, a true patriot, was just really, he was devastated by it. And he was called to carry the cup into the king. And the king said, "What's up, Nehemiah? I've never seen you look like this. You're always happy and, you know, always smiling. What's your problem?" And Nehemiah said, "How can I be happy when the city, my city, the city of my God is lying desolate?" The king said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And I like that. This is an instant prayer. He said, "I prayed unto the Lord and I said to the king." No long prayers here. It's got to be one of those arrows. If I could have permission to go back and to lead in the building of the walls so that they can have security. Because the problem was is that their neighbors were harassing them. They would build up something one day in the night, the neighbors would come in and tear it down, and they just didn't have defenses. They needed a wall. So if I could just have permission to go back and to rebuild the wall, well, how long do you suppose it'll take, Nehemiah? And so Nehemiah gave him a time. And so Artaxerxes signed a decree for the restoring and the rebuilding of the wall. It happened to be that it was March 14th, 445 BC. Now, if they're on their toes, they'd have gotten their calendars out and began at that time to mark off the years. Because in 483 years from this point, the Messiah will come. 483 years later, on April 6, 32 AD, Jesus was with his disciples. He was in Bethany, and he told the disciples to go over into the village, and they'd find a little donkey tied on a certain corner, untie him and bring him to me. And if the master says, "Why are you untying my donkey?" just say, "Well, the master needs him." They brought the little donkey to Jesus. They found it on the corner where Jesus had said, and they brought the donkey to Jesus, and Jesus is setting up this day. The prophet Zechariah had said, "Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. Rejoice, ye daughters of Jerusalem. Shout for joy. Your king is coming unto you. But he is lowly. He's riding on a donkey." So they brought the donkey to Jesus. They began to lay their clothes, their robes, and so forth, wave palm branches as he made his way down the Mount of Olives toward Jerusalem. And they began to cry Psalm 118, which is a prophecy of the Messiah. The prophecy concerning the Messiah begins in about verse 16, 17, there where it says, "This is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Hosanna, Hosanna." In Psalm 118 is translated into English, "Save now, save now." That's what Hosanna means. "Blessed is the king. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." And then it goes on to talk about the stone which the builders had set in naught, the same has become the chief cornerstone. This is the work of God. It's marvelous in our eyes. Amazing prophecy, Psalm 118. But they began to sing that psalm. It was a psalm that was acknowledging that Jesus was the Messiah. Now, up until this day, Jesus had deliberately discouraged their attempts to acclaim him as Messiah. One time after the feeding of the 5,000, they were going to try and just acclaim him and all, and he passed through their midst. First time he allowed public acknowledgement of him as the Messiah. Because he was presenting himself to Israel as their Messiah. Coming in on the donkey, 483 years from the commandment to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. The Pharisees, hearing them sing this 118th psalm said, Lord, you better rebuke them. That's blasphemy. You remember the answer of Jesus. I tell you, if they would at this moment hold their peace, these very stones would start to cry out. This was the day that the Lord has made. You know, that isn't just any beautiful morning. You wake up and you go to the window and the sun is out. And say, oh, this is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice. No, no, no. That was one day that the psalmist was talking about. The day that God would fulfill his promise to send the Messiah. As Jesus came close to the city, as you come down the Mount of Olives, you get this beautiful view of the Messiah across the Kidron Valley. Beautiful view of the East Gate and the city of Jerusalem. And as he got to this spot where, looking over the city, he began to weep. And he began to say, oh, Jerusalem, if you had only had known the things that have belonged to your peace in this thy day, but they're hid from your eyes. And the enemy is going to come. They're going to put a trench around you, and they're going to dash your children in the street. And he began to weep because he could see the tragic consequences of rejecting the Messiah. And I wonder if he doesn't still weep today as he looks at the tragic consequences in the lives of people who have rejected him as Messiah. Not that he is weeping because of rejection, but because of the tragic consequences to those that do reject. And he announced the consequences that were going to take place. Now, that is 69 of the 77s. The Messiah was cut off, as Daniel said, without receiving the kingdom, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come, that is Titus with the Roman troops in 70 AD, they will destroy the sanctuary, which of course he did, and the city. And the Jews were dispersed. But that leaves an unfulfilled 7-year period. The 70th seven of Daniel. So in the 27th verse, he goes in to tell you about this last 7-year period that God has a covenant with the nation of Israel. God has 7 years yet to deal with the nation of Israel. When they rejected the Messiah and were dispersed, then God brought the gospel to the Gentiles, and for these last almost 2,000 years, he has been drawing out from the Gentiles a bride for his son. The Holy Spirit is drawing out the bride, and you have, of course, the beautiful type in the Old Testament where you remember an interesting thing when Abraham offered Isaac as the sacrifice, and God intervened, and he called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh. In the mount of the Lord, it shall be seen. And when Isaac said, where is the sacrifice? He said, God will provide himself a sacrifice. Now we read that after the Lord provided that ram in the mount, it was after that that he called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, and he said, in the mount of the Lord, it shall be seen. And of course, we know that it was Mount Moriah. We are told that. And we are told later that Solomon was ordered to build the temple on Mount Moriah. And if you'll go over to Jerusalem today and stand on the top of the Damascus Gate and look at where the Dome of the Rock stands, you can see the golden dome of the Dome of the Rock Mosque. But if you'll notice on the hillside, it's built not on the top of the hill, but on the side of Mount Moriah, and the mountain continues and crests across the street, except there's a valley now because of the quarry that was there, and there's where the entrance to Solomon's quarry is. And you can see the top of the mountain is across above that Arab bus station, and there in the side of the mountain, which was Mount Moriah, you'll see the face of a skull. And in the mountain of the Lord, God provided himself a sacrifice. And you can see it. But God has this 7-year period yet to work with the nation of Israel. Now, in Matthew 24, well, let's take a look. That is, the prince of the people will come. He will confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, or the 7-year period. And that's a week of years. And in the midst of the week, he will cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate until the consummation, and that which determined shall be poured out on the desolate. He will cause the abomination to make it, that shall make it desolate, or as Jesus translates it, the abomination that causes the desolation. Now, switching gears, we'll move to the New Testament. Another incident. Jesus has been walking past the temple with his disciples, and they're calling his attention to the huge stones that Herod used in building the temple. Of course, you can see some of those huge stones still in the wall of the retaining wall that he built there. They call it today the Western Wall, which was the retaining wall. And you can see how large the stones he used there. But next to the retaining wall, in recent excavations in the southern end of that retaining wall, the Western Wall, down in the what was at the time of Christ the major Roman road that went through the Turopian Valley, where you look today at the Western Wall, you see pictures of the Jews praying at the Western Wall. Underneath of where they are praying, you can go down for 70 feet to get to the time of Christ. So you can't walk up to the Western Wall there and that and say, I walked today where Jesus walked. I walked over 70 feet over today where Jesus walked. The Tropian Valley is down below. But they have excavated down at the southern end, and you can see some of the huge stones that the Roman soldiers dumped over the retaining wall that Herod had built, and they came crashing down on the pavement, which are huge stones there at the bottom of the they've cracked the huge pavement stones, and you can see these stones that were once a part of Solomon's temple, or not Solomon's, Herod's temple. Now, as they are going through, looking at these huge stones, saying, Lord, look at these big stones. Jesus said to them, there's not one of these stones that's going to be left standing upon another. An amazing prophecy. So when they got over to the Mount of Olives, they said, Lord, you know, you said not one of those stones. We said, when's this going to happen? What would be the signs of these things? Now notice they're asking for the signs of these things, that is, signs of the destruction of the temple, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So in Matthew 24, you've got to divide between the signs of the destruction of the temple and the signs of his coming and the end of the age. So he talked about things that would not be signs. Wars and rumors of wars, and these things do not really constitute signs. But then there will be nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, a worldwide state of war, or a world war, you might say. And then Jesus said, When you see the abomination of desolation that was spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then flee to the wilderness. For there's going to come a time of great trouble such as the world has never seen before or will ever see again. The great tribulation period. What will trigger it? When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. And then there's the commentary, let him who reads understand. So the Lord expects us to understand what he is referring to when he talks about the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. We're commanded to understand that. Now going back to Daniel, the 12th chapter, and we're going to pop back and forth for just a moment here. Going back to Daniel, the 12th chapter, Michael is there, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people. There shall be a time of trouble, as, like Jesus said, such as never was since the nation existed, even to that same time. And the time thy people will be delivered, every one shall be found written in the book. Many of them that sleep, the resurrection and the dust, the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to everlasting shame and contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. But thou, Daniel, notice verse 4, shut up the words, seal the book, for even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, knowledge shall be increased. So I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood two others, the one on this side of the river, the other on the other side. One said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? I heard the man who was clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and he swore by him that lives forever and ever, that it shall be for a time, a year, times 2 years and a half time, or 3.5 years, when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. I heard, but I did not understand. I said, oh, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the end of time. Many shall be purified, made white, and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice will be taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who comes to the 1,335th day. So, first of all, the prophecies of Daniel, he did not understand himself. And the Lord said, Daniel, it's sealed. In the last days, knowledge will be increased. Now, we see an exponential increase of knowledge through computers and so forth. We are doubling man's knowledge every few years. All of the amassed knowledge that man has gained from the beginning, gets doubled in just 10 years or so because of computers and what's going on. But that isn't what the prophecy is about. Knowledge of this prophecy of Daniel will be increased. Seal it up. It's for the time of the end. And at the time of the end, then they should understand. Which to me sort of makes mute the issues that people say, well, you talk about the rapture of the church, but you don't find Spurgeon talking about the rapture. You don't find Luther talking about the rapture. It's not in Calvin's Institutes and so forth. And so the rapture of the church was actually something that came from a Plymouth Brethren church in England when this woman with prophecy, you know, spoke about the rapture, and then Darby took it and developed it, and Scofield popularized it in his Bible. And so the rapture is just something that, you know, you don't find it in church history. St. Augustine and all didn't talk about it. Thomas Aquinas, I mean, you know, it doesn't happen in church. Well, it did happen. Paul talked about it. But the Lord is saying to Daniel, in the last days, you know, knowledge is going to be increased. God is going to open up the understanding. As these events now are beginning to take place, suddenly we can understand a lot of prophecy that we really couldn't understand. Where Jesus said that unless those days be shortened, no flesh would even remain on the earth, but for the elect's sake they shall be shortened. Jesus was speaking about a time in history when man would have the capacity of destroying mankind off of the face of the earth. Now, prior to the development of the atomic weapons, all we really didn't have that capacity. The Bible tells about this man of sin who is going to cause everyone to receive a mark in his right hand or in his forehead. And no one would be able to buy or sell unless they had the mark in their right hand and in their forehead. Couldn't understand that until we came to computer age. And we have the computer chips, and we have the scanning devices and so forth. And we have applied digital angel communications down in Florida that's already developed the chips for identification and other purposes and all. In 90 days, they plan to start distributing these in South America. The FDA is causing them to hold off a little longer here in the United States, but it's a technology that we can now understand how it could be. In fact, do you know that they are talking already about taking and making our driver's licenses a national identity for each of us? It was just two weeks ago in the UN, the fellow said, we need to have an international identity so we can stop terrorism, so we can stop these people, we can identify everybody. And it was presented in the UN just 2 weeks ago. Daniel said, the Lord said to Daniel, seal it up, it's for the time of the end. There'll be understanding then. Knowledge will be increased. So, what is this abomination of desolation that Jesus says we need to understand? Going to 2 Thessalonians, as Paul is writing to the Thessalonians concerning the coming again of our Lord Jesus Christ, are being gathered together unto him. He talks about that day shall not come until, first of all, there is a falling away. The Greek word is apostasia, and literally means a departure. Now, Paul, writing to Timothy, talking about the peril of the last days, said that many would apostasia pistuo, depart from the faith. But it's a departure from the faith that Paul was talking to Timothy about. But just departure itself, Walvoord makes quite a case for that as referring to the rapture of the church. It's not an airtight case, and so I don't use it. I don't like to use anything that I cannot really sort of come to an airtight conclusion on. But it's an interesting aspect to just look at it. If you look at it as just departure and read it as the departure of the saints or the rapture, it would fit. and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who is going to come with all lying deceivableness and all, people will be deceived. And it says that he will stand in the temple of God, showing that he is God and demanding to be worshiped as God. Now, going back again to the 9th chapter, as we deal with the 70th seven of Daniel, the prince of the people that shall come will make a covenant with the nation of Israel, but in the midst of the seven-year period, he'll break the covenant, and he will set up the abomination which will cause the desolation. It would appear that, we don't have time to go into all of it, but going back in Daniel to the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, and I'm going to just scan because I trust that you all have a basic understanding of this. In the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, that Daniel interpreted and caused him to be elevated. In that dream, Daniel said, before you went to sleep, you were wondering what the future holds. What's going to happen? And the Lord who dwells in heaven has given you a dream in which he has shown you the kingdoms that are going to rule the world. Because you saw the image with a head of gold, chest of silver, stomach of brass, legs of iron, feet of iron and clay with 10 toes, iron and clay mixture. And he said, these are the kingdoms that are going to rule the world. You, Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. God has given to you this great empire and all, but your empire is going to be defeated by an inferior empire, the chest and all of gold, which will be destroyed by the stomach of brass, which will be crushed by the legs of iron. And of course, the legs of iron never really defeated, but the legs of iron becoming feet with 10 toes. Iron and clay mixture is iron and, or mixed with iron and clay, but they really don't mix. So it speaks of sort of a federation of nations that once made up the Roman Empire, or if you please, the European community today. And very interesting that just at the first of the year, the 12 of the 15 nations declared their money worthless in 2 months. It's all got to be transferred into euro dollars. And this whole thing is coming together before your very eyes. This United Kingdom of Europe. The revival of the Roman Empire. The nations that comprise the Roman Empire. Again, now joining together with treaties. The clay. So not the strength of the iron just alone, but now a diluted strength because of the it's joined together with treaties. The iron and clay mixture. So there will arise, Daniel had a corresponding dream to the succession of nations, the Babylonian Empire being replaced by the Medo-Persian, being replaced by the Grecian, being replaced by the Roman Empire. And then he saw it in beast, and the last beast had 10 horns, and there came up the 11th horn speaking great blasphemous things and so forth. Or the Antichrist, which will actually be raised up to rule the European community. That's where he's going to come from, out of the European community. So the prince of the people that shall come to the nation of Israel to make a covenant will be the Antichrist. And no doubt in this covenant that he makes with the nation of Israel, the issues are going to be to settle the problems that have existed between the Palestinians and their insistence upon a Palestinian state with Jerusalem as their capital, and the nation of Israel itself. Now, this is one of the knottiest problems that we have in our world today. This is what they say is why they bombed the World Trade Center. Because we are supporting Israel. And that if we continue our support, that's just the beginning. They're going to continue their attacks against us and their attacks against Israel. Now, ultimately, they're going to realize that they're not going to be able to do it except by force. And they will join together their nations in Ezekiel chapter 38. Muslim nations join together in an invasion of Israel. And when it looks like there is absolutely no chance for Israel at all, then God is going to intervene. He's going to destroy this invading army, 5/6 of them. There'll be 7 months burying the dead. They will, interestingly enough, be putting flags up next to the corpses rather than touching them. Professional men will come and bury them, which sort of hints to perhaps a radiation, fearful of touching them because of the radiation. But God will intervene in such a way that people will know that God has saved the nation of Israel. And at that time, this fellow from the European community will come and make a covenant with the nation of Israel, and no doubt in the covenant make provisions for them to rebuild their temple. Now, in talking to the Jews today about Jesus as their Messiah, the typical line that they will give you is that we do not believe that Jesus is the Messiah. Why? Well, because he claimed to be the Son of God. We don't believe the Messiah will be the Son of God. The Messiah will be a man. Moses said, there shall arise a prophet like unto myself, and to him shall you give heed. Moses was a man, the Messiah will be a man. Oh, if he's a man, how will you know he's the Messiah? He'll lead us in the rebuilding of our temple. They are set up in their minds to accept as their Messiah the man who will come along and lead them in the rebuilding of their temple. Interesting, Jesus said, I came in my Father's name and you did not receive me. Why won't they receive him today? Because he claimed to be the Son of God. I came in my Father's name, you would not receive me. There's another that's going to come in his own name, and him you will receive. And so they will rebuild the temple under the treaty. They will put a wall next to the Dome of the Rock Mosque that Ezekiel saw in chapter 42 and describes the wall that was built around the new temple. And he said the wall was to separate the holy place from the profane. When John in the book of Revelation chapter 11 was given a ruler and told to measure the temple and the courts, the order was don't measure the outer court, it's been given to the Gentiles. And so they will rebuild the temple and they will start again the daily prayers and sacrifices. And then this leader from Europe will come again. He will stand in the Holy of Holies and he will declare, I am God. You must worship me as God. Jesus warned the Jews to flee from Jerusalem at that time. We are told in Revelation chapter 13 that God gives her wings of an eagle to bear her to a wilderness place where she will be nourished or taken care of for 3.5 years. During the time of the Great Tribulation. This is the trigger. This is the event that will bring onto the world the time of the Great Tribulation, a time of greater trouble than the world has ever seen before or will ever see again. And from the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation, chapter through chapter 18, you can read the details of this 3.5 year period of time, the horrible things that will happen here upon the earth during that 3.5 years. Both Daniel and Jesus described it as unprecedented in the history of mankind. So, where are we? It seems to me that the players are all in position. The Muslim nations have declared war against Israel and against us for siding with Israel. And the first shots have already been fired and are being fired at the present time. We are just waiting for Israel to go in a full-out attack against the Palestinians. They are convinced now that they're not going to be able to sit down and negotiate a peace process with the Palestinians, that their only answer that they will understand is force. Arafat has sort of been pushed out of the picture as far as the Israeli government is concerned. They said they want no more dealings with him because he's two-faced. He'll call for peace after every major terrorist attack against Israel. He immediately calls for, let's sit down and talk peace. They're tired of that. He is talking about, you know, a ceasefire while he's bringing in 50 tons of advanced type of weaponry to be used with the Katyushas that could reach from the Gaza Strip into any of the major metropolises of Israel. And they said, we've had it. And they are just waiting now for the next major terrorist attack to send in the Israeli army to bring control to the West Bank, Gaza Strip, when they do, they are fully aware that this can be the provocation that will cause Syria and Iran and the other Arab nations around them to attack them. But they're willing to do this because they cannot continue taking the harassment by the terrorists against their civilian population. So you and I know that this whole thing could erupt at any moment. Now, the interesting thing is that when this alliance of Muslim nations attacks Israel, that they will have the support and all of Russia, and that at that time, when God intervenes, his fury, he said, will arise in his face. He'll turn them back, leaving but a sixth part, and talks about the destruction. There at the end of chapter 39, the Lord declares that when I am sanctified before the eyes of the nations, and that sanctification goes back to verse 23 of chapter 38, when he destroys this invading army, then I will be sanctified before the nations of the world. He said, when I am sanctified, then I will put my spirit upon Israel again, and I will not hide my face again from them. Which means that your 70th seven of Daniel will start ticking at that moment. You'll be able to then count off the years from that moment. Because then the Western leader will come, he'll make the covenant with the nation of Israel, and in the middle of the week he'll break the covenant. And from the day he breaks the covenant, you can start marking off your calendar to the return of Jesus Christ in glory with his church will be 1,290 days. The first order of business when Jesus returns is what? Gathering together the nations for judgment to determine which ones will be allowed to go into the kingdom age and which ones will be destroyed at that time. Probably 45 days, because blessed is he who comes to the 1,335th day, you've made it in. You've passed the judgment time. And of course, the judgment will be concerning, those that take the mark of the beast in the right hand and in the forehead. There's no hope for their salvation. Those that worship him, he sets his image up in the temple in Revelation 13 and demands that everybody worship it. And they have power to put to death those that won't take the mark or those that won't worship the beast or his image. But the 14th chapter, the angel warns, if you do worship the beast or his image or take his mark, there's no hope for your salvation. As they proclaim the everlasting gospel and the warning to the people not to take the mark. God is still offering and reaching out and offering deliverance. Only then it's going to be through martyrdom. That great number in heaven which no man can number, who have come up out of the great tribulation, who washed their robes white in the blood of the Lamb, who were martyred for their testimony. And so we are really living in that day when any day you can pick up your paper and say, and read where Israel has sent its troops in, you know, to restore order in the Gaza and in the West Bank and Ramallah and these areas. And you can then expect the Arab nations around them to come to the help of the Palestinians. And this whole scenario will just unfold in just a moment of time. So, as Jesus said, when you see these things begin to come to pass, look up. Lift up your head, for your redemption is drawing nigh. Now, I want you to note, he's talking and giving signs of his second coming. These are not signs of the rapture. They're signs of the second coming. The rapture is going to precede that by 7 years, at least. Last October, just before Halloween, at the big South Coast shopping mall that's not far from our church, my wife and I were driving home, and they were putting up the Santa Clauses and the reindeer and all around South Coast Plaza. And I turned to Kay and I said, "Look, honey." I said, "It's almost Thanksgiving. Look at that." I said, "Oh, wow, I love Thanksgiving." She said, "You nut. Those are not Thanksgiving decorations. Those are Christmas decorations." I said, "Oh, I know that. But I know that Thanksgiving comes before Christmas. And if the signs of Christmas are out, Thanksgiving's got to be close. If the signs of the second coming are out, you know that the rapture of the church has to be close." Now, the word of Jesus to his disciples after this Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24:25, he began to give a series of parables, and the thrust of each parable was, watch and be ready, because you don't know the day or the hour the Son of Man comes. Blessed is he who watches. Blessed is he who, when the Lord comes, finds him so doing. And if the good man of the house had known in which hour the thief was coming, he would have been prepared. Watch ye therefore, and be ye ready, for you know not the day or the hour the Son of Man comes. Have the five foolish virgins been watching? Had the oil? Notice, they that were ready went in. Therefore, watch ye and be ye ready. And so that's really the word of Jesus to us today. Watch and be ready. It can happen at any time. It's important that that we're ready when it does. Because as you read of the things that are going to happen once the church is taken out, you don't want to be here. Guaranteed. God bless.